Welcome to the Remix My Fitness podcast, where we learn that there's more than one way to eat, train, and live. I'm your host, Jimmy Kim, and thank you so much for tuning in today. If this is your first time checking out the show, what's up? Thank you for coming by. I hope you stick around and enjoy today's episode. All the other regular listeners out there, I have another special guest today that will definitely inspire you to keep moving towards your fitness goals. I have one thing that I do want to get off my chest before we get onto today's show, which is I want to state on record that moving sucks. I mentioned last week that my family and I, we moved to our home, and it has been so much work. It's crazy how much stuff, or should I say how much junk, we've accumulated over the years. We've done a major purge, so I literally feel like I have taken a couple hundred pounds off my chest, off my shoulders, wherever you want to call it, 100 pounds, definitely at least 100 pounds lighter. And if you have any tips on how to live a minimalist lifestyle, hit me up. I would love to know, because I can't do this again. I'm all ears. So listen, hit me up, jimmy@remixmyfitness.com. Give me some tips if you're pretty good at staying organized or staying clutter-free, because I need all the help I can get, because it's either I do that or I'll just never move again. On today's show, I have a fellow podcaster, Aaron Broverman. He's the host of Speech Bubble, which is a comic book-based podcast, and it's on the Never Sleeps Network. He's also a journalist who's written for Yahoo, Vice, TVO, Now, and he's a fellow Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioner. We go to the same academy, and we've practiced together. And what I find so inspiring about Aaron's story is he practices Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and has cerebral palsy. There are many different ways that cerebral palsy can affect an individual. And in Aaron's case, it affects both his legs and has a difficulty with balance and coordination. So with that disability, he still practices Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Now, exercise is something that anyone with cerebral palsy should do, which will help improve their physical mobility. But what I find really interesting about Aaron is that out of all the types of exercises or fitness regimens that Aaron can choose from, he has chosen to do a combative martial art. And he wakes up at 4:30 in the morning to make this all work for him. Did I say 4:30 in the morning? The guy wakes up at 4:30 in the morning when most of us are still sleeping. And it really shows you, no matter what kind of obstacle you have, whether it's time, whether it's a physical, whether it's something physical, or you have a mental block, if you really want to do something, you can make it work if you really want it. Because Aaron could have just gone out and he could have just done his regular types of physio exercises, his basic stretches, all the things that he's already learned how to do and that has proven to help him, but he just found that boring. And you will get to hear the other things that he's tried, and none of them are, I would think, are conventional exercises. But he's definitely gone out and found his thing. And more than anything, I love how he thinks about exercise, thinks about his own personal fitness, which is, what is it that I really want to do? What's going to get me to actually want to go and do it? Because doing those regular physio exercises, doing those basic stretches, he actually goes out there and he finds things that actually interest him. So let's get into today with Aaron, and let's meet him. And one thing I want to mention before we hit up with Aaron in a second is I would love to hear from you. I would love to hear from you, listeners. Let me know if you like the content that I'm providing, if you want to hear other things, or whether you have questions. And you can hit me up at jimmy@remixmyfitness.com. That's my email address. I respond to everybody. Or you can go onto the comments field on iTunes. You can write a comment. You can put in a review. And just let me know whether you like the show. If you want to hear something, I take your comments and I take what you ask of me very seriously. So, that being said, without further ado, here's Aaron. I want to welcome to the Remix My Fitness podcast a special guest today. His name is Aaron Broverman. He's a writer. He's a podcast host himself. What's going on, Aaron?
Hey, what's up? How are you?
Not too bad. Look, man, I guess I want to get right into it. I I wanted to talk to you today because we actually trained together at Toronto BJJ, and I find, dude, man, I honestly find your story and your journey, your fitness journey, just really, really inspiring. And if I don't mind sharing with the audience, Aaron, you have cerebral palsy, right?
Yeah, I have cerebral palsy. For those who don't know what that is, it's basically brain damage that occurs at birth. It's usually a bleed in your cerebellum, which is the thing that controls like motor function and muscle control and that sort of thing. It happens in a variety of different ways. Usually it's like lack of oxygen to the brain at the time of birth or after birth. And depending on the severity of the damage that occurs and like where it is in the cerebellum, then the cerebral palsy will present in a variety of different ways. You can have a severe diagnosis where, you know, you're completely tight and rigid and in a wheelchair, maybe you're like nonverbal and that sort of thing. Or you can have, you know, a more minor diagnosis. My diagnosis is basically it's called spastic diplegia, which basically means that like the main part that cerebral palsy affects is my two legs, and it affects things like my balance and my coordination, and there's a lot of like muscle spasticity that happens. So but it's the sort of thing that like with exercise you can sort of, you know, if you stretch, if you do a lot of like physical fitness and stuff, you can sort of improve it. You can get to a point where like I was, you know, when I was doing my weekly physiotherapy, you can get to a point where you're, you know, coming from like a wheelchair into, you know, walking and stuff, and you can do it with regular physiotherapy and usually surgery, orthopedic surgery also is part of it. You know, lengthening your hamstrings. Sometimes people walk with like their feet turned in. So sometimes, you know, like in my case, they get like rotated out and that sort of thing. So yeah, I had flat feet. So in order to create an arch in my feet, they took a bone from my hip and placed it in the bottom of, I think, my left foot. So it like created more of an arch in my foot, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's sort of how cerebral palsy worked for me, but it's different for everybody, and it presents differently for everybody that has it.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that and you know, giving us a clear description of what it is and the different kinds of scenario, I was going to say scenarios, but the different kinds of effects that cerebral palsy has. And what's crazy is that you, like I said, we met through doing jiu-jitsu, which is not something that I would imagine that I would meet somebody who would have cerebral palsy that would go out and do jiu-jitsu, right? Like it's pretty crazy. And I want to get into that, but first, it is tradition here that all the guests come on, and then we do something called Cracking Your Fitness DNA, and it's a little quiz that I developed that helps. It's like a little fun little fitness personality quiz, and I developed this because as I was training people, I realized that not everybody was into lifting weights and going out for runs. So it helps me like identify like what activities and what workouts that I should program for the people that I train with. Now, there's no pressure, but I do have 100% track record here on the podcast. So so we'll just get right into it. It'll just take us a couple minutes, and I want you to answer as honestly as you can. You just pick one best answer, and then we'll see if the results come out the right way. Sound good?
Okay.
All right. So now we're back. We just finished doing the fitness DNA quiz. Did you find that painful, Aaron?
No, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I mean, the stuff that I don't really think about very often, but so it's nice to, actually drill down to like what you actually do
Yeah.
in your workout. I learned something probably as much as you did.
Amazing. So, you ready to hear the results?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna slide this into the supercomputer that I have, and this is what it says. So whenever I share the results with people, I like to mention that sometimes you might fit into multiple different categories, right? Or if you find that you don't think that you fit into a category, then I mean I ask you, the answers are here in the Fitness DNA quiz. If you scroll down and you can see the different things that are out there. If you aren't if you don't match that category, I implore you to go out and see, look at the other categories, and maybe something that's there that might pique your interest. But in your case, you are like slightly you fall into two categories. So the main category is it's what we would consider the loner. So, which
Okay.
means that you enjoy working out by yourself, essentially.
I do.
Yeah. And you would typically like things you would typically like to do things where you kind of just get into your own zone, and you prefer not to be bothered by others. But
Right.
you do fall into another subcategory the way you answered your questions. So, if you're not working out alone, you actually prefer working out with one other person. So not like a huge group of people, but what we call this, your partner in crime.
Oh yeah, cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, because I mean, I do the other person I work out with most is my wife, so that is also a thing because I entered into like rock climbing and that's a two-person thing. So that really makes sense.
Okay. So would you say that we got it right on the fitness DNA quiz?
Yeah, because like even with jiu-jitsu, that's an individual sport, but I like the camaraderie of having other people, in the room. I like feeling like you're part of a team, even though it's not really a team in the traditional, like, team sport
Right.
sense.
And it's kind of hard to do jiu-jitsu with three or four people at the same time, right?
Right, exactly. Unless it's a shark tank or
Yeah,
something.
exactly. So look, I want to talk more about jiu-jitsu, because how did you go about finding it, and what, I guess, what gave you the confidence to go and try it? Because look, if I was sitting where you're sitting, I would think, man, I don't know if jiu-jitsu is something that I would want to do, and I'd be concerned with just, I guess, my own safety and whether I could do something like that well. And I'll be honest, maybe what other people would think of me when I do it. So why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
Okay, well, I have a lot of experience working out because like one of the key ways to alleviate the symptoms of cerebral palsy is to work out, like I was saying earlier. So that means that like as a kid, from like the time I was like 3 to the time I was 18, I was doing like regular physiotherapy, like one-on-one with the physiotherapist, exercise, that sort of thing, once or twice a week. I would go swimming on certain times because there's, swimming is really good for certain things that you can't really do on land. Okay,
Okay.
cool. No problem.
Sorry. So you're talking about, you said something about swimming.
Yeah. So when you grow up with cerebral palsy, you do a lot of working out. I did like horseback riding, I did physiotherapy, and I swam a lot and stuff. But a lot of this becomes, very routine, very, repetitive. I'm a lazy person by nature, so I hate, working out, but like once I'm there, it's fine. But like I'm not a person who, likes to get up and do all these sorts of activities. It's really like a pain, but I know that like I have to do it for, to help with my disability and stuff. So all this sort of like, working out and, doing all these traditional workouts got like really repetitive. So after a while, like when you're 18, you know, there's a lot of resources when you're a kid with cerebral palsy. There's a lot of treatment for, like, you know, the pediatric stage of cerebral palsy. But when you're an adult, they sort of release you into the world. I think the last thing that I did was they would take a group of us to, like, a gym and, like, teach us how to use the equipment. And they were like, okay, like, this is going to be, you know, the way that you work out now. Like, it's up to you to, like, be disciplined enough to go to the gym. You know, good luck. Here's some adaptive equipment. Here's some exercises you can do. And, you know, kind of see you later. Like, you're on your own sort of thing. So after that, like, I went to university. I got busy with my studies. I moved to Toronto from Vancouver to attend Ryerson University. So, like, exercise wasn't on top of my mind. And I got a little fat and, like, lethargic, and it wasn't really good. Like, my family was noticing. Like, when I went back home to Vancouver, my dad, in his trying to be subtle but not really subtle way, he put a newspaper article. Like, I was staying at his house. I got up, and he put a newspaper article, like, on the chair that I always used to sit in. And he underlined some words, and I think the headline was, like, you know, obesity can cause a heart attack, and, like, you can die. And he, like, underlined some passages trying to, like, motivate me.
Good old dads.
Yeah, get working out and stuff. So I came back after Christmas that year. I think it was 2013. And I'd already, or maybe, yeah, maybe 2012. And I'd already been like, okay, well, I have to do something. I'm not feeling good. He's sort of right, you know. So I was already a fan of the UFC when it came on Spike TV, and it was a lot more accessible than it was in the early 90s because, you know, you didn't have to have pay-per-view. They had, you know, I watched, like, the Stephen Bonner versus Forrest Griffin fight that everybody loved.
Right.
And I watched The Ultimate Fighter, like, the first season with Randy Couture and Chuck Liddell. So I was already, like, a huge fan of jiu-jitsu, but looking at it, I thought, like, I can't do that. Like, I don't want to get my ass kicked. Like, this is like, a crazy thing. Like, these guys are getting injured, and it's awesome, but, like, I don't think I can do that. Plus, like, just standing up to, like, throw a punch would be hard. Like, I'd have to lean against the cage all the time in order to, like, stand up without my crutches and stuff. And, like, that's not cool. Like, how am I going to do that? But I also listened to the Joe Rogan podcast.
Okay.
And on the Joe Rogan podcast, he was talking to Eddie Bravo, who's, you know, a friend of his, a guy that does no-gi jiu-jitsu. He invented 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu, which is, like, the, I don't know, most popular no-gi system for jiu-jitsu, I guess. And they were talking about it, and they were talking about how, like, you know, you're on the ground. Like, you're mostly in jiu-jitsu, you're on the ground. And, like, you know, that jiu-jitsu is the part of the UFC that you see when the fight goes to the ground. And I thought, oh, like, I never thought of it that way. And I thought, like, if you're on the ground, like, maybe this is a sport that I can do where, you know, I'm actually able to compete at like a level playing field with other able-bodied competitors. I had done a lot of adapted sports, like wheelchair basketball, and I went to a lot of sports camps where you try different adapted sports. And those are great, but it's always like a separate sport for the disabled people, right? Like, it's always like you're over here, and the rest of and able-bodied people are over here. Like, I remember in elementary school, I tried to, like, get on the basketball team, and I would take my wheelchair, and I'd be like, oh, yeah, I can just do it in my wheelchair. And they're like, yeah, you can attend the practices, but, like, we're really concerned that, like, you're going to hurt somebody, you know, running your chair into them by accident during the game. So, like, you can't really be integrated. So this seemed like a sport, you know, the way that they were talking about it. Maybe I could do this on, like, a level playing field. And I did have, like, a lot of aggression growing up. Like, my brother and I are really close in age. We We used to like fight all the time. Like it was like a really knockdown, dragout sort of thing.
Right.
So I knew that I liked physical contact and like that sort of like, you know, I guess near death scenario.
But just like that very like close contact, right? Because that's probably the number one reason why my friends don't do it, because they find that really odd. they call what I do like aggressive hugging with pajamas on.
Exactly. I part of me wanted to fight somebody, like wanted to like challenge myself in that kind of like physical way. And it, when you get into jiu-jitsu, you know, let's say somebody chokes you and like, you can always tap, right? Like there's no shame in tapping. You can always tap, but before you tap, you have to test yourself and see if you can get out of essentially somebody trying to kill you in that moment, even though they're not. But like, that's, you know, if this was a real situation, they kind of would be, you know?
Yeah, there's no tapping in a real fight.
You know, and I like being on that edge of like, can I get out of this? Oh, I feel my breath leaving my body, but like, don't panic, like stay focused, you know, you keep going, that sort of thing. I like it. It's sort of a thrill for me, you know, that let me try to like avoid this situation when I'm on like this precipice of almost tapping,
right,
sort of thing. You know, how difficult a situation can I get myself in that then I can like get out of? So I thought, okay, like I can probably do this. And also, like, I'm really good, even though my balance on my feet isn't that good, my balance on my knees is pretty good. Like, when, you know, I crawled for a lot longer than most kids did, you know, growing up. And for a while, it was, like, the main way that I, like, got around. So I thought my balance on my knees was, like, pretty, you know, equal to that of a person who didn't have a disability. So I thought jiu-jitsu would be good. Like, I've always wanted to do a martial art, but I always thought, you know, I couldn't just stand independently and get punched. Like, that wasn't going to be a thing. But jiu-jitsu, I was on the ground, so maybe I would have like a bit of an advantage. I knew that my upper body was strong. People always said you have a really, really strong upper body. So I'm like, okay, like, I'm going to try this. And all it took was, like, you know, listening to Joe Rogan and Eddie Bravo and thinking about it in a different way than I was thinking about it when I was actually watching it on the UFC and stuff.
Right.
So that's how I got into it.
And that's pretty crazy, because I know so many people who have gotten into jiu-jitsu by listening to Joe Rogan and Eddie Bravo, and I think they've been huge advocates of that, and that's, for me,
podcast.
Amazing. Well, you know, I've seen so many people come to the gym who have disabilities, and I think that's something that really separates jiu-jitsu from a lot of the other martial arts. I know I've seen people who are either they can't see, or they can't hear, or both, and then, you know, people like yourselves. And I think that's really amazing.
There's even been some people in wheelchairs.
Man, that's awesome. So tell me, what was it like your first day of class or your first session? Like, walk me through that. Walk me through what's going through your mind when you're doing something like that.
So I think really my challenge started when I like called. Like, I literally finding Toronto BJJ was just me Googling Toronto Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And I basically picked the top result. And I'm like, okay, well, it can't be in, like, North York or somewhere where I knew a lot of the MMA gyms were, like Extreme Couture and that sort of thing. Because I live downtown, and I wasn't going to travel, like, an hour north to get to do jiu-jitsu. So it had to be somewhere downtown, and Toronto BJJ was downtown. And so I phoned, you know, after like 20 minutes of like, you know, picking up the phone, starting to dial and like hanging up, and then picking up the phone and finally dialing. And then I did like the normal spiel that I usually would do, you know, when I was, you know, doing like regular working out at a gym where you sort of go, you know, hi, I want to do jiu-jitsu, but there's probably one thing that you should know. I have cerebral palsy. And at that point, I always expect people to be like, oh, well, you know, we're concerned about liability. We don't want you to get hurt. I don't know what you can do. Sometimes, like, when you go to a gym, the personal trainer will, like, help you for, like, one or two classes. And then eventually, like, you'll get far enough into the program where they'll, like, pull you aside and go, like, you know, you could do, like, the basic stuff, but, like, now that we're into this, like, I'm really concerned. So, you know, thanks for coming, but, like, I don't know. Like, that's happened where, like, they take me into the office and, like, and sort of close the door and go, like, hey, Aaron, we really like you, but, you know, I don't know if, like, you'll be able to continue doing this. So that's fully what I was expecting from jiu-jitsu. But I called the gym and I like gave them the spiel because I felt like that's what they needed to know. And the guy's like, oh yeah, like that doesn't matter. Like just come down sort of thing. Like he totally like, I was like, okay, fine. But I was late for my first class, like really late because I didn't know how to like time it out properly. I didn't quite know where the gym was. Like I knew like the general area, but I didn't know how long it would take me to get there. So I was late. And then you got to like sign the waiver and stuff. And it was busy. It was like a night class sort of thing. So he's like, okay, well, we're not going to have time to like do the introductory lesson, but like, why don't I, like, you know, show you, you know, get changed in your gi, and why don't I, like, show you around? Here's, like, a loaner gi, and then I'll take you to the office, and, you know, we'll have a bit of a meeting. And I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. This is when they're going to sort of talk to me for real about this.
Yeah.
But, like, he's taking me on a tour of the gym, and everybody is, like, super nice. Everybody, like, comes up to me. They make a point of, like, coming up to me and stopping what they're doing and like introducing themselves and like really welcoming me in a way that they don't have to. Like usually when I'm like touring a gym, people stop what they're doing, but they just stop to look.
Mm.
Like, you know what I mean? So I was really impressed with like every single person that I passed was like, hey man, what's going on? Welcome to the gym, blah, blah, blah. Totally on board and stuff. And then we go up to the office. And I'm like, okay, well, that was fun, but, like, this is probably where they're going to get down to the nitty-gritty.
Yeah,
of, like,
this is well, though, to give me the breakup spiel, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I get to the office, and he's like, well, what are your goals from jiu-jitsu? Because we're not going to, like, take you on unless you're, like, serious about this.
Mm.
And that really, like, struck me, because I was expecting to have to, like, explain to them and justify to them, you know, why I could do this and like why I could pull this off and have to like convince them to keep me.
Now they're telling you, yeah, what, like, tell me why you want to do this and we'll see if you can be on board, right?
Exactly. And I wasn't expecting to have to like really think about why I wanted to do jiu-jitsu on my kind of thing. So I, you know, it's like a whole sheet of paper and you had to decide right then and there, like, you know, what are your goals? Do you want to compete or do you just want to train? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I was just thinking about training. I don't know if I want to compete kind of thing. But it really like destabilized me in a good way because I really had to think about my goals. I remember I told Luke, like, I don't know if I want to compete, whatever. And he's like, yeah, you say that now, but like, just put down competing because he's like, you know, you're going to want to push yourself and stuff. And like training is fine and stuff. But he's like, I picture like bigger things for you. And I'm like, bigger things? Holy crap. So then finally he's like, okay, well, we'll do the introductory lesson like next time you come in. And we did the introductory lesson, like stuff that I could do. Like he understood right away that there was still certain things that I could pull off and still, you know, win a match and stuff. But they also did a thing, which I don't think they do with a lot of people, where every week I was like one-on-one with Nacho for like the first part of the class. Like when I was a white belt, I wasn't training independently. Like Nacho was my coach. He figured out like a warm-up for me. So like when everyone is like putting each other on their back and like doing that kind of stuff, like I wasn't doing that. Like people would put me on their back, but I wouldn't put anyone on my back and like walk around and that sort of thing. And mm-hmm. and you know, it was hard for me to do some of the like rolls and stuff. So he figured out this like warm up that I would do on the side with like kettlebells, and like I would, you know, throw a medicine ball around and like walk back and forth. Like it was like this whole customized warm up thing that he did and stuff. It was really helpful to like build up my exercise. It reminded me of physiotherapy, but it was like physiotherapy in order to be better at jiu-jitsu. So I didn't mind it as much as I would if we were just doing exercise to like make myself healthier. Like I felt like it had more gravitas because like this is gonna make me like a better fighter kind of thing, you know?
Right.
Join this.
So tell me, so it must take a little bit longer for you to get around, and we kind of talked about while we're doing the fitness DNA quiz, like the overhead time of training. So when we go train or go to the gym or go for a run or anything like that, it's never like that 1 hour workout or a 2 hour class. It's usually like 3 hours or 4 hours because you got to travel to the gym, you got to get changed, you got to shower, you got to go, you know, do all that stuff, and then you got to travel back home. So that must be a little bit longer for you, no? So how do you organize your time to get all that going?
Okay, well, I'm fortunate that I'm a freelance journalist, which means that I work from home. So at least I don't have like a regular office job that I need to get to. But that doesn't mean that it's, you know, not challenging for me to actually like get to the gym. I use a mobility scooter to get around. Like I don't drive. That's something I'm working on right now, but for like the longest time, I haven't driven. I use a mobility scooter, which is like, like what your grandmother would use, like those electric scooters with like the basket and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of what I use to get around.
How fast do those things go,
it's
by the way?
It's a combination. I always tell people, because that's like the number one question that like strangers and friends will ask you. So I always tell people like 6 kilometers an hour. I think it's around there. It's between like 4 and 6 kilometers an hour to peg in and that sort of thing. At first, Toronto BJJ wasn't super handicap accessible, even though they were like really receptive to people with disabilities, and you know they had no problem with us training. They have a step out front, so I would leave it, which I was fine with though in this circumstance, because I was there to work out. So if part of that workout was like having to go up the steps and stuff, like that was just what I was there for. And like you get into like this martial artist mentality where it's like every challenge is like a part of the warrior mentality kind of thing. You know, like of course I have to like go up the stairs. Like that's what I'm here for. Like this is a disciplined situation. Mm. So I would park my scooter out the steps. I would take my shoes off. Didn't want to talk to anybody because that would totally delay the timing and maybe I'd be late for class. I'd, you know, put my backpack on my back, get it off my scooter, put my backpack on my back, go in, take my shoes off, you know, make sure I had my water bottle, make sure I had everything. If it was winter, I'd have to take my jacket off. So there was a whole production. And then you get downstairs to get changed and you know, it takes me longer to like actually get dressed and like get my gi on and do all that sort of stuff. The benches are kind of narrow, so for some parts of it, I don't, you know. And some people are like, you know, isn't that sort of degrading and, like, undignified and stuff? And I'm like, maybe, but, like, when you have a disability, it's more, you think about, like, what you need to do to get things done and, like, how you need to adapt. So you don't really think about, you know, what you're doing to yourself from a social perspective, because it's just, I don't really care. It's just what I need to do to get stuff, you know, get things done. So yeah, I would get dressed and And usually I would, and then I would go up the stairs, and that would be part of the workout too. Like, I considered going up those three flights of stairs part of the workout. Like, this is what I'm doing. You know what I mean? Like, the moment I tell Josh, the owner, or George, that I need an elevator installed at Toronto BJJ, I might as well give up, right? Like, that's not what I'm here for. Like, this isn't laziness sort of thing. So, even though I hate, you know, getting up to go to do these sorts of things, eventually, like, you get into a routine. Like, it's something that, like, you just do. Like, you don't even think about it. You just go because you know that the moment you hesitate, you're not going to want to go. So as soon as I'm at Toronto BJJ, like, I'm very much like, this is the workout, this is the mentality. I'm in bare feet, and my feet drag. So sometimes they would catch on the steps, like on the middle edge of the steps. So by the time I got upstairs, like, my feet would already be kind of scratched and you know, wasn't good. You know, I get a lot of, even on the mat, I would get a lot of, like, mat burn and stuff on my feet. And I tried using other things. Like, I tried using those grip socks, like those socks with grips. But I didn't like it. Like, I felt like during, when I was actually doing, like, technique and stuff, I would, like, slip. And eventually the grip would, like, fall off. So I kind of balanced it and was like, you know, I could scratch my feet, but I'd rather have, like, you know, good stability for good technique. So, like, scratching my feet doesn't really matter. Like, I'm just going to get used to it. I'll build up the calluses. I'll put the tape on my feet if I can, type of thing. But this is something.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. So I was going to say, it takes you an hour. So if you leave your house at 10:30 and class starts at 12,
yeah,
it literally, the overhead time for you is an hour and a half to.
Yeah, like, yeah, I have to get there by, I have to get to Toronto BJJ, if class starts at 12, I have to get to Toronto BJJ at 11, because I want to leave myself enough time to get changed and, like, get ready and stuff.
So the actual gym time, when you're actually there, it takes you an hour to basically get ready and get changed and get you up to the main dojo. And then I guess I imagine it would take you an hour and a half to also get back to get going then, right? To leave the gym.
Well, yeah, but when you leave the gym, it's not so bad, because when you leave the gym, like, there's no pressure to be there on time. So when I leave the gym, I used to take my time more. Like, you know, you're tired from training. You know, you're sort of talking to guys and, like, reviewing the day's practice and stuff. So, like, I was always sort of the last one out, but that didn't really matter to me because, you know, I'm trying to recover. And, you know, it was around lunchtime at that time when I used to do that. So I go to the noon class.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually I switched to the 7 a.m. class because I thought, okay, like, it'll take me the same length of time, but at least the 7 a.m. class ends at 9.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have the whole day ahead to, like, do my work. And I still went to jiu-jitsu, and I'll feel really good about it and stuff. But I'm like, 7 a.m., like, that's brutal. How am I going to do this? Like,
so that means you're getting
I'm
up at
5:30
in the morning then? If all
4:30.
Sorry, 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, 4:30 in the morning. So I get up at 4:30 in the morning. And how I do that, because that's the craziest part, that's the worst part. Once I'm up, it's fine, because, you know, you're up, you're already awake. So what I do is I put my cell phone, which has my alarm clock, in the washroom, which is, like, across the hall from my bed. So in order to turn off my alarm, I have to get up to turn it off. Like, I can't just roll over and go back to bed.
Your wife must love you for that.
And once I'm up, I think she likes the fact that I'm doing it at all, and she, like, really admires it. So I think the fact that I'm actually doing it and making it happen outweighs, you know, the moment that I, like, wake her up a little bit.
That's amazing, because I know my wife would
proud of me.
My wife would probably divorce me if I kept doing that, because I know me, I would do that, and then I would go to the washroom, I would like leave it on and then go to the washroom, turn it off, and then come back to bed. And I would do that for like weeks on end. And she'd be like, you're never gonna make it to class. So good.
No pedestrians or anything.
Well, hopefully maybe I'll make it out to training with you one day. I am not a morning person at all. I have
Neither have I.
dragged myself to wake up. I've tried, you know, I've been in this academy for 10 years, and I think I've promised myself to go and try to make it work many, many, many times. Hasn't worked out yet, but maybe this time, maybe next time I do it, I'll stick the phone in the washroom and try that trick out. But I also want
I
to kind
hope to see you.
of I'll see you too. But what I also want to get into is, so aside from doing jujitsu, you keep yourself pretty active, and I think you do something that's really amazing and something that is not a lot of people really think about doing, which is you are active with your partner as well, right? So you go out for hikes, you go out for walks, and do you do anything else with her?
Yeah, so my wife Brittany, she's very into camping and like outdoor stuff. Like her family has a cottage and stuff. So when we were dating, like early on, and you know I was kind of lazy, she'd be like, "Hey, like I want a partner that like at least tries to like go camping with me." Like she laid down the law. Like these are the sorts of things that I want to do. And you kind of have to be on board if you want to date me. And I really did. So we go camping every year in September. We did a thing where we did like an East Coast trip to the East Coast of Canada, and we sort of divided it between camping and Airbnb. Recently, she's become a freelancer too. And there's a place near Toronto BJJ called Basecamp Climbing, where they converted an old porn theater into a rock climbing gym
I'm very
sort of
familiar with
thing.
that place. Not the porn theater part, but Base
Of
camp.
like
I know
this
base
this
camp.
building. Yeah, and they've like I say that it I mentioned that it was a porn theater because they've kept the marquee, so and like all the posters have like you know, movie-related rock climbing puns and stuff, and you know where they used to show like the showtimes for the movies, they like you know have promoted like you know summer camp for rock climbing, you know register today kind of thing. So it's kind of interesting. They've like incorporated the marquee, and every day I used to pass that place and go, oh, like I'm gonna try that. Like I'm gonna go in there. My sister-in-law, she also rock climbs. So it's a way for me to like, you know, connect with her if I go rock climbing. And I knew that like that this would be a thing that she would really dig if I started going rock climbing. So every time I train, I pass that place and I wondered about it and stuff. And they have a ramp outside, so I'm like, that's an invitation that they want people with disabilities to come in because they obviously got this ramp, you know, for that purpose. So finally, I went in. And I was planning to just do the rock climbing thing myself, but I came back and like mentioned to my wife that I was wanting to do this, at least try it out, see if I could do it. And she said, "No, I really want to do that with you." And I didn't realize this, but like rock climbing is the perfect sport to do with a partner because as much as it's about actually climbing the wall, it's also about like making sure that the person is safe. Like there has to be somebody belaying you on the ground. So when I'm climbing, she's belaying me and making sure that she's managing the ropes and stuff. And then when she's climbing, I'm doing the same thing. So we're both active in different ways. You know, you really do need a partner to rock climb properly. So it's the perfect partner workout kind of thing.
You just
And
described it
I think
was
we're going to continue it.
the way you described it was, it's very you need that person to belay you. You need that person to someone's down on the bottom, someone's on the top, and it's a very great metaphor for just any relationship, right? Because the way you were explaining that, I was just it made me think of my wife and and our relationship. When I'm down, she picks me up, and when she's down, I pick her up. And yeah, that's I had to shoot that in there because that made me think of that. So
Well,
you.
yeah, because she has like your safety in her hands. If you're on the wall and I say something to make her mad, she could just let me fall. So it's a real like metaphor for trust, like you're saying.
So I want to transition to this because you write for you're freelance, right, for a lot of places. You freelance for like Now, Vice, Yahoo, and some other things, some other places, right? And you also have your own podcast, which is called the Speech Bubble Podcast, right?
Yeah, it's the Speech Bubble podcast. I'm a huge comic book fan. I have been since I was a kid, and I needed to do something on the weekends with my dad. And it just became sort of an addiction. Like my brother and stuff was into comics, but like he grew out of them. I never did. So and it just got worse. Like I just bought more comics every week. So I'm a journalist, and I always wanted to I always wanted to write about comics and make that my beat, but it was really tough to convince editors that like comic books were like a legitimate thing. So one time, I have to tell you this story because it just goes to show like sometimes the stuff that jiu-jitsu gives you has nothing to do with fitness. Sometimes it enhances your life in so many unexpected ways. Because I was competing in the GTA Classic, which is like a tournament in Brampton, and I lost that day. Like I lost the first match. I think it was like triangle choke or something. But I met and so my actual fighting day was only like 5 minutes. But I met a guy who was at the registration table, like doing the registration, and his name was Alex. And he said, "Hey, I know you. Like, we went to school together." And I said, "We did? We def?" And he's like, "Yeah, we definitely did." And he showed me a video that he had done at Ryerson, where he was doing like on the street interviews with people as they would come into the journalism building where we would study journalism. And he was doing radio and television arts, and he was asking them like, why do you press the handicap button on the door when no one else when you're not a person with a disability? Why do you do that?" And people would like hem and haw and like, "Oh, I don't know, blah blah." And then he asked me, "What do you think like with my mobility scooter?" And I didn't remember that this even happened, but he showed me the video, so it did. He asked me like, "What do you think of people pressing the automatic door button when they don't have a disability?" And I said, "I don't mind. Like, the less work that I have to do, the better. Like, if they're pressing the button, that means I don't have to press it. It's fine." And from that, like, he always remembered that, I guess. And he told me like, "Hey, man, like, I'm putting together this podcast network out of my house." Like, he always knew it was going to be like a network. He wanted like a bunch of different shows out of his house, and he's like, "I'm looking for shows, and I want, do you want to be one of my first podcasts? If you have any ideas, email me and stuff." And I'd always wanted to do a podcast, but I don't have like the editing skill. I don't have the equipment. I don't have the technical knowledge. Like, I know that I can interview. I know I'm really good journalist for that, but like, I don't want to have to deal with like editing my own podcast or putting together all the equipment, getting all the stuff. So I'm like, this is perfect. So I pitched him the podcast, and I was already part of the Toronto comic book scene for a long time, and I'd met a lot of people. I'd met like Ed the Sock, and I'd met a lot of creators who were now writing for DC and Marvel. But when I met them, they were like independent creators, sort of struggling in Artist Alley of different conventions, trying to put together their independently published comics and stuff. But now they were like big names in the industry. So, and I knew that like a lot of people in Toronto did comics. Like, Toronto is one of the best places in the world to make comics because we have Sheridan, we have OCAD, and a lot of people go to those schools to learn art and design. And then we have a lot of awesome comic shops that all cater to different parts of the fandom, in a way that like other cities don't. Like, comic shops in other cities are sort of the same. And I never got to meet any of my comic book idols until I went to Toronto. So I knew that there was a huge comic book scene here. So I pitched the idea, which was I wanted to do like a WTF with Marc Maron long form interview podcast where I just talk to people involved in the comic book industry. That's shop owners and journalists who cover the scene, but creators too. And I just get to know them. And it was a way for me to like do, you know, stay connected to the comic book scene and not have to like, you know, get the green light from an editor in order to like just to record. It's pretty amazing.
That's amazing. I think not a lot of people know this about me, and but I'm actually a comic book buff myself. Probably not as big as you though, Aaron, but I used to collect comic books when I was, you know, a teenager, and I still have all of them stored away at my parents' place. And I was just looking at them the other day, or like a couple weeks ago. And I don't know what it is. I enjoy the story of comic books, but you know what I really enjoyed? I really enjoyed the cover art, and even the back art if they had it. And that's something that I think, because it always related to like fitness, and I was always into fitness and health and working out, and just to see these superheroes just look amazing. It always inspired me. Do you have a particular character that you like yourself, or a villain, or?
Yeah, I mean, comics always inspired me too in that way, because, you know, as a person with disability, like, you know, I wouldn't trade my life for anything, but it's nice to think, you know, like that you could be like an ideal version of yourself. And like, I really like that. Like, and I was really inspired by superheroes in that way, like having powers and stuff. You know, when things got frustrating, I would think, you know, I wish I had like superpowers and stuff. But in terms of the heroes that I really identify with, for me, Spider-Man is somebody that I really identify with, because I'm kind of neurotic and I have a lot of anxiety about a lot of different things. And Spider-Man, what I liked about him was like he was balancing superherodom with like the stresses I fight with. And also, I identify with the Hulk. Because sometimes when you have a disability and you're walking around, you don't know your own strength and you don't really know what you're doing. Sometimes, like, you don't even notice that you, like, knocked over a thing, or you know, you're trying to, like, cook and you like, break something, or you're trying to, like, you know, pour something into something and it sort of misses the whole pot or whatever. So there's a lot of, like, clumsy sort of Hulk-like things that I do where, like, I'll pick something up and I'll accidentally break it, or I'll fall into something or bump into something, and it feels like the Hulk just walked through.
For always helping me out that way. You know what's funny is that the Incredible Hulk is also one of my favorite characters as well, probably my favorite character of all time. And I just Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of. Is that right? Or is it Mr. Hyde, Dr. Jekyll? One of the two.
No, it's Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
Dr. Jekyll, sure. Mr. Hyde. It's something about that Bruce Banner, Incredible Hulk. And I just really enjoyed how the Hulk, he gets hurt, but he gets angrier and he gets stronger. And I think he also, if he gets so angry, he'll turn into like the Gray Hulk or the Red Hulk. And I don't know, just things like that. It was always my favorite character. And I wanted to ask you, you know, I give all my guests an opportunity to ask me questions about their own fitness or their own health, and if you have any, I would love to answer anything for you. And it could be for yourself, or it could be for someone else. If you don't have any, that's cool too.
Okay. I think I'm at a moment where like my question for fitness and stuff has more to do with like diet, because I find that like no matter how hard I train and no matter how many, you know, training sessions I go to or how many sports I'm doing, hopefully it helps with like doing the rock climbing now, but like I'm still kind of fat in the middle and stuff, so I was wondering a little bit about diet, but also too how to like strengthen my core, because I'm really finding that that part of my body is like the most important for jiu-jitsu, especially if you're on the bottom and you want to like get somebody off you and stuff. I think the core and like getting up when somebody's like laying on you, you know, my like stomach muscles are like super important. So I wanted to ask you about like, what should I be eating if I'm a dude who goes to jiu-jitsu?
Okay.
And then also like, what kind of exercise should I be doing if I want to like strengthen my core?
All right. All amazing questions, man. So I want to start off actually with the first one. So what you should be eating. I guess if I could take you back to your first day of jiu-jitsu, is what is the goal for you? Is the goal for you to lose a few pounds, to drop some weight, or is it to get strong? Like what would like, if you could just pick one thing, like what would it be?
I think to lose weight. And when I first started doing jiu-jitsu, like I did, like I just lost weight doing jiu-jitsu and everything was cool. But then, you know, life happens and I got like an injury for a bit and I was off for a while and stuff. And it's hard for me to, and I like broke the routine that I like really had going, and I'm getting back into it now. But like now, I find it's harder and harder to lose weight and get those pounds off in a way that it wasn't when I first started. And I was like in my 20s
right.
and stuff.
So it's really, look, the most basic formula I can give, if anybody wants to lose weight, it's not the formula is not very hard. It's, you need to eat less and you need to move more. So someone who is gaining weight, they are not doing one of those two things. They're either eating too much, not moving enough, or, you know, you can play around with that. So knowing that is very important, because then you can really assess to see, okay, am I moving a lot, or am I not moving enough? Am I eating too much? That is like, that's important to know. So if you're not, right. you're finding that you're moving less now?
I think the moving thing is okay, but I always have to be careful, because I do ride a mobility scooter. So the main position that I'm in is sitting, and I'm a writer, so I sit at my computer too. But I do go to jiu-jitsu and I do rock climbing, so I don't think moving is my problem. I think I might maybe eat too much. Mm-hmm. Each time I go for a meal, you know, or I eat too often or something.
Okay.
So I think that's more my issue.
Yeah. So the number one thing that I always ask people to do is you need to have some measurements, right? So the measurement that's important is how much calories are you consuming, right? And I know it's a very tedious task, but to track your calories. So I ask people to track the calories just for 4 days, usually. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, because those are the days that people start to lose it the most. So out of those four days, then you can kind of see what your caloric intake is. So if you want to currently maintain your weight right now and you don't really change a lot of different factors, then you take your weight and you multiply it by 10. And that gives you the number of calories that you need to consume to maintain your current weight. So from there, you have to decide, okay, if I want to lose weight, I need to subtract a certain amount of calories. And that's usually the number is 500. So in 1 pound, in 1 pound, there is 3,500 calories. So if you're to do it, the most ideal way would be if you either ate 500 calories less every day for the next 7 days, you would then by that formula, you would lose 1 pound a week, right? So 3,500 calories is 1 pound. If you dropped if you ate 500 calories less for 7 days, that's 3,500 calories, right? So you can either do that.
Yeah,
by,
that's awesome.
Yeah. So you can either do that by eating 500 calories less, or burning 500 calories through exercise, or you could do that by eating 250 calories less and burning 250 calories through some sort of exercise. And you can kind of play around with those things, right? So,
That's awesome. Is there an easy way to track your calories? Like, is there like an app? Is there like
yeah, there's, I mean,
a
there's tons of
thing that
apps
you,
out
or?
there. The app that I like to use, just because I've been using it for a long time, is MyPlate by Livestrong. But there are other apps
Okay.
out there. And whenever you're tracking your calories, like I said, it's not something I find that majority of people don't enjoy tracking your calories, but that's you really don't need to do it for very long. It's 4 days. You can really see an honest look at what you're eating and how much you're eating. And when I tell people to track their calories, don't go like crazy in detail. Like I think that's why people start to lose it. So, for example, like a lot of things that I eat are not in there. So I'll actually just put down the ingredients. So if I make myself like a green smoothie, I'll just put a cup of kale, a cup of, carrots, or a cup of whatever, right? Or, a handful, and I'll guesstimate. Like it's not gonna be very off. Or if you're gonna go out and you're gonna eat like fried chicken somewhere, and it's like there is no Popeye's fried chicken in the app, then you pick another fried chicken. Fried chicken is generally gonna be the same. The calories are gonna be off by maybe 50, 100, 200. It's not gonna make a crazy big deal out of it. So don't get so stuck on the details, and if you don't see the food there, then you just put it in. You literally input, I had chicken, I used a teaspoon of oil, and I used breadcrumbs, a cup of breadcrumbs. And it'll give you like your best estimate there. And then from there,
Okay,
you would have to
cool.
then decide like how are you gonna lose these calories, right? So I think you mentioned that you generally eat like a high protein based diet, right?
Yeah, mostly.
Mostly. And
We try to do like vegetarian twice a week, but then the rest of the time, I think it's like high protein most of the time.
Right. So I would definitely add in, make sure that you when you're tracking your calories, you track your plant-based diet days or your vegetarian diet days, because I think a lot of people think they're eating a high amount of protein, or they're not consuming as much. But I have found that majority of vegetarians that and plant-based diet people that I train with, who are overweight, are they can easily consume way more calories than they're actually thinking. Because if you're a vegetarian, or if you follow a plant-based diet, you're either doing something where you're having an extremely high amount of carbohydrates, right? Which is very easy to, it's very easy, it's very easy to overconsume carbohydrates, or you are consuming a very high fat-based diet. So like a lot of, and depending on what kind of vegetarian you are, right? Like a lot of like yogurts, or a lot of creams, or high fat, fruits and vegetables like avocados and nuts. Like those things are in very small portion, but they have high amounts of calories in them. So sometimes they think, okay, it's plant-based, I can eat a lot of this, but they're not thinking about how many calories are in something like that. So
Right.
yeah,
Okay.
the most important
Okay,
thing, just
cool.
yeah,
And
remember the
then,
formula.
nice. So my second question, like in terms of strengthening my core, what's the best way to do that?
Well, the best way, I mean, it's a combination of three things, right? So you need to strengthen not just like, don't think of it just your abs, but your abs, your lower back, and your hips, right? So the best bang for your buck move would be doing a plank. And is that something that you're able to do, whether you're able to do it on your knees or on your hands? Or sorry, not
Yeah,
your sorry,
I'm
not your
able to do
hands,
it.
on
I'm
your on your
in.
elbows and your knees.
Yeah, I'm totally able to do it. I'm only able to do it for like a very limited amount of time, but I can do it. It's the worst possible thing ever, but
You
for sure
mean,
I
is
can
it the
do it.
worst possible thing for you because you have problems getting into the position, or you just hate the move? You just hate the move in general.
No, I just hate the move. Like doing a plank, like we do them sometimes in
Right.
jiu-jitsu, and most people have to hold it. Like I don't know how long it is, but like I'm always like holding it for a few seconds, and then I have to like stop, and then I go back. Like I'm really trying to like maintain the position,
Right.
but
So
it's just so tough.
it is, it's a tough move,
Yeah.
and like I said, it's the best bang for your buck move there, right? So I would say generally what you should be aiming to do, and if you were to set a goal for yourself, would be 2 minutes. So a 2 minute plank is what is widely considered to have a good core strength. 2 minutes. So what I would do is
I'll build up to it.
Yeah, and if you're trying to build up to it, this is how I would build up to it real quick, would be do your plank as long as you can, whether it's 10 seconds, 30 seconds, 40 seconds, whatever it may be, right? And then from there, I would take 5 second or 10 second breaks in between and then see and then get to 2 minutes, right? And then I would count how many breaks I take in those 2 minutes, or sorry, how many times I take a break within those 2 minutes and try to hold. So let's say I held for 30 seconds. And that's as long as I could hold. I will take a 5 second break, and then I'll hold for, I'll hold for another five seconds, and then I'll take a 10 second break, and then I'll hold for 5 seconds and take a 10 second break, and see and kind of count how many breaks I take. And then the next time that I do it, I would try to see if I can reduce one of the break times. So then hold for like 10 seconds. Hold for 10 seconds for one rep, and that would be like a fun.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like a fun way to kind of break up the routine and not just think like, oh man, I'm gonna hold for 2 minutes, because if every time you do it and you can't get to 2 minutes, it's very disheartening, right? And then you just don't want to do it anymore. But in this way, you have these reps almost to kind of count on, and you build up to it. But that would be the best way.
Yeah, totally. I had no idea that like planking was so good, and it's so simple to do. Like you don't need any extra equipment. You could just lay down and do the plank. So that's awesome.
So hopefully that helps you out. And look,
thank you.
Just before I close off the show with you today, I wanted to ask you: what kind of advice would you give somebody who is looking to start on their fitness journey, or who's already started and maybe losing a little bit of their motivation? You know, is there anything that you would tell somebody to help them get them going?
I feel like you just have to. You just have to go. I find that like the hardest part about doing anything fitness wise is just getting started. Like going to the place to do the workout, or like doing getting up to like go to jiu-jitsu at in the morning and that sort of thing. But like once you're out of the house, it's fine. Like you're already on your way. It's good. So like the thing that really, messes with me about whether I'm going to go to training or not is like just going, you know what I mean? So I would say, you have to make it so that like you make it easy for yourself to actually like get out of the house and do it. Right. So if you're going to, go to training, make sure that like you don't have like that work isn't going to carry over into the next day. Like set up your life so that the day before you get up early and you get all your work done and you really concentrate, so that on the day that you're working out, there's actually less to do and you feel less guilty about what you're not doing at home or like what still needs to be done, work wise or whatever. Like you should do that like the day before. And then also like, if you're leaving the house early, do what I do, like make it so that like getting up in the morning is like unavoidable. Like you have to get that really annoying alarm clock off, because the alarm clock is like in the next room or like across the room, and it's just going to keep being annoying if you don't get up and actually turn it off. And then, the further you have to travel to like turn off your alarm clock, the less likely I think it'll be that you go back to bed. If the bathroom that's like next to your room doesn't work, like in the same way that it works for me, put it in the kitchen and like turn it up full blast and make it so that you have to walk to the kitchen and get like a really annoying, scary alarm clock. Like get one that'll like scare you awake. Don't get those like stupid, pleasant sounding ones. Get like sounds. One that like, yeah, get one that like squawks at you or is like super loud. Like when I was getting up for school as a kid, I used to have like an animatronic parrot alarm clock that had the most annoying parrot style, like, run, get up, And I used to be so annoyed with it that I would have to get up and turn it off. And you know, I made sure that the alarm clock was far away so that I actually had to, like, walk over to do it, you know? Because, like, once you're up, you're not going to turn around if, like, your bed is, like, in the next room. You're like, oh, well, I'm already in the kitchen. I might as well start making breakfast or, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
So I think that helps. Like,
yeah. Well, that's amazing mindset, Aaron. And so I guess Aaron's advice is, you know, tonight, if you need to get up early, you know, stick your phone in the washroom or in the kitchen, make you walk. So listen, I really appreciate you coming on the show today, sharing your story. You know, if anybody wants to kind of get in touch with you or you know, or anything like that, how can they do that? Or check out your podcast.
If you want to get in touch with me, you can always get in touch with me at my email address, Aaron, Aaron. Dot Broverman, B like in Bob, ROV like in Victor, ERMAN at gmail.com. I'm always accepting, you know, random messages from people as a journalist and stuff. You never know what's going to turn into a story. And then to check out my podcast, we're at the Never Sleeps Network at neversleepsnetwork.com. And the podcast is called Speech Bubble. We're also on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcast needs met. And you can also follow us on social media at SpeechBubblePod. If you want to do like a extra thing because you're like, I don't know, really inspired by my story or something, go review the podcast. Take a listen to the podcast on iTunes and go review it on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, because actually writing a review helps it get to the front of Apple Podcasts and iTunes, which makes people see it, and it really just attracts more people to the show, and it doesn't take a lot to leave a review. So do that if you want to do something extra for me.
All right, so go out there, review podcast shows, hint, hint, Aaron's, maybe mine. Okay, buddy.
Yeah, review Jimmy's too, for sure.
All right, sound good, bud. Hopefully I'll see you in the gym sometime soon.
Yeah, I hope so, man. You might have to get up early, but hopefully we can train together.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna stick my phone in the washroom tonight, and I'll let you know how that goes.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
All right, talk to you later, Aaron. Thanks a lot. I want to thank Aaron for coming on to the show. I do have a quick update about the whole alarm situation. I did listen to Aaron's advice. I set the alarm and I put it a little bit further away from where I usually would put it. But I couldn't get up in the morning. I'm sorry. I have an 11-month-old girl who just barely sleeps as it is. So if I woke her up to because I let the ringer go on too long, or if it was too far, or anything, I would have had a whole house full of people that would have hated me for the rest of the day, at least for the rest of the day. But I will find a way that works, and hopefully soon, and I can go back training with Aaron. So watch out for that. I will make it happen. So that's it for me. You know where to find me, and if you don't, then come join my team. My team is on Facebook. We have our own private Facebook group, and you can ask to join this group by going to bit.ly/remixmyfitness. This is our own private Facebook team that I have, where you get to talk to me, you get to talk to other members like Aaron, who are just out there, and we're trying to motivate each other. We're trying to find the thing that works for us, and I find it works better in a group, or in this case in a team. So come in and join and meet some of the members. And also, if you don't want to join our Facebook group, that's fine. My feelings are a little hurt, but you can still hit me up at jimmy@remixmyfitness.com, or you can hit us up in the comments field, and I'd be happy to answer anything that you have, anything that's on your mind. I'll be back with another episode next week. So until then, set some goals, go challenge yourself, but most importantly, don't forget to have some fun. Until next time, peace.